Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
You're listening to Unlocking the Unknown Radio.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen, in live paranormal land. We are back, and we are back with a vengeance. Welcome to Unlocking the Unknown Radio. I am your host, Gary Fisher. And after a few months off the airwaves, I had to take a sabbatical. I've decided to bring the show back, but it's going to be better and improved and newer than ever. I promised you guys changes, and we made some changes. First off, our new time slot is right now, 7 to 9. Every Monday night, Eastern Time, of course. Thanks to Rob at Live Paranormal for the hookup on that. And I promised you other changes, and I brought you other changes. I don't know if you're going to be ready for them, but here they are. Our brand new permanent co-host. First up, he is the man behind Squid Biggins Games. He is the CEO of Paratools, the paranormal tool app company, revolutionizing the paranormal one app at a time. He is one of my co-founders in See First Paranormal, Big Ed Bogrowski. Also, our new co-host.
Let me up a little too big there, Gary. I don't think I deserve that type of introduction, but I'm really pleasantly surprised to be here. You know, I wasn't really planning on doing a radio show, but I am so glad to be a host on this show because I've loved it since day one, and, you know, there's nothing more I want to do than go through these type of journeys with my friends, a little play on tonight.
Awesome. Well, welcome aboard, my friend. And next up is our other permanent co-host. He is a 20-year military veteran. He is a consultant with See First Paranormal, and he was one of the crew that I took with me up to Hales Bar Dam and Marina in the last fall to shoot our upcoming documentary that's going to be coming out later this year. I give you the man, the myth, the legend, Brian Huxley. B. Hux, thanks for coming on board the show tonight, my man.
Gary, thanks for having me. It's great to be a part of it. To go from a listener of every week's show to now all of a sudden being a host just proves that dreams can come true, buddy.
Awesome.
You made everybody's dream come true.
Once again, boys, it's a pleasure to have you, and I'm looking forward to pressing forward with the three of us as we interview some of the most interesting guests in the field of the paranormal and occasionally pro wrestling. If you guys want to sit that one out, feel free. But, we've got some awesome guests lined up for our first couple months back. Looking forward to getting to them down the road. But for those of you that may not be familiar with Ed and Brian, why don't you guys go ahead and just give us a quick 30-second spiel on who you are and how you came into the world of paranormal. Ed, go ahead and start with you.
I was born a poor black child. No, I'm kidding. Actually, I've been in the paranormal for many, many, many years, probably somewhere in the teens. I run Paratools, as you had mentioned, as well as Squid Biggins Games. And I love the ability to be able to meet with these people. And this is one of the reasons why I did it, Gary, not just for you, but the whole idea of being able to dive inside these people's minds and see a little bit more of what makes them tick and what answers they're going to have to our crazy questions that co-host Brian Huxley has. So that's pretty much it. You'll find out more about me as I go on.
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited as well to hear what questions B-Hux has for the guests and any listeners that may call in, because the guy has a unique viewpoint on the world. He's very down to earth. He's very logical, and he's one of the funniest dudes I know. So, B-Hux, you have the floor, sir. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about you?
Well, like you and I discussed, I had experiences in different locations when I was younger. I never really got into the paranormal side of things. You know, grew up watching television shows about it. Didn't really know that there was just large communities per se. Once you and I were coworkers out in Phoenix, Arizona over those years, and I got working closely together and got talking about it, I realized, wow, there is a community out there, and heard some of what you've done. And then once you went your way and I went my way, through communication, you kind of brought me into it a little bit closer, and I've had the privilege of going on a couple of investigations with you guys, and really appreciate and like the camaraderie and the friendship that I've made with your friends down in Tampa, Ed being one of them, obviously. But at the same time, I'm very much a skeptic on a lot of stuff, so I'm going to question a lot, and I'm also the guy that sits in the room and kind of looks around and realizes here we are, a bunch of adults sitting in a dark room, talking in the voice recorders and expecting to find something and think, wow, that's kind of odd yet funny.
That's
you
awesome,
hit the nail
dude.
On the head with that.
So real quick, while we wait for our guests to join us on the line, Ed, take a quick, 10, 15 seconds and tell us what's the most amazing experience you've had related to the paranormal in your career or life.
I would have to say one of the most amazing experiences is when we were down at the old South Pittsburgh Hospital and captured the entity on film. The ability to be able to see it right in front of you happen and then capture it on film and have it be almost undeniable. There hasn't been anybody yet that's really been able to give us an idea of what else it could be other than an actual paranormal experience.
B-Hux, what about you?
You and I have talked about in the past that my personal experiences is what got me drawn into it. Me and my grandfather was close as I was growing up, and then we moved to Florida, and he remained in Indiana. And then once I joined the military, and I was actually stationed in Turkey and was in flight over the Atlantic Ocean, and I felt his passing, and I knew that he passed. So that kind of gave me that, hey, there's something out there other than just what we got going on. Then later on when I was stationed in Guam, had a couple experiences where I lived with what I would call paranormal. So that definitely is what got me involved and interested in it. And didn't put a whole lot of thought into it until you and I talked about it later. And when we talked about it, to have somebody's ear that wouldn't sit there and say, you're just a fucking weirdo, it was kind of nice.
Well, in addition, you are a fucking weirdo, but you're our fucking weirdo, and we're proud to have you on the team.
Well, thank you.
For anybody that may not be familiar with me, if you're listening to the show first time, as Brian said, he and I were a longtime Air Force comrades. You say comrades in the U.S., or is that illegal? Anyway, I had an experience when I was 11 in my house with my mom. Kind of got me interested in paranormal. And then I joined the field, almost 10 years ago now, when I was stationed in Columbus, Mississippi, with a local group. And since then, I've been all over the world with the Air Force and had an opportunity to be a part of several different groups and do investigations all over the world, including internationally in Kuwait and South Korea. And now I'm stationed here in Tampa, part of an amazing group, C-First, that both Brian and Ed are part of. And we do what we do to help people and to make people feel safe and secure in their own home. But that's enough about us. I believe our guest is on the line tonight. So joining us from the greater Phoenix metro area is one of the stars of the hit History Channel show Missing in Alaska. He is the man behind Journeys with Jax, amazing website. He is a modern day adventurer. He's my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jax Atwell. Jax, thanks for joining us so much tonight, buddy. We really appreciate you being the first guest back out of our hiatus.
How are we doing, guys?
Hey, Jax. Glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'm actually not in Phoenix right now. I'm almost in Salt Lake City driving.
Oh, that's right. You're
on the road.
For those who may not know, it's his Clark Kent job. Jax is also a private investigator that does work in several states out there out west. But Jax, you're on the air, not only myself, but my new co-host, Ed Bogrowski and Brian Huxley. And if you're ready, my friend, we've all got questions for you tonight.
Awesome.
I guess I'll start off. Since I've known you longest, you know, this field is kind of neat, and the fact that you kind of get to make some new friends, and having the show was neat because some of my prior guests end up becoming friends. You can definitely fall into that category. But for people that may not have been familiar with the show, talk a little bit about how you got the opportunity to be on Missing in Alaska and some of the experiences that you had, whether they be paranormal or just travel-related while you were on the show.
Gary, can you repeat just a little bit of that? I think you broke up a little bit. I'm not sure if Jax heard everything that you were saying to him.
Yeah, it was extremely broken.
Okay, let's try this again. I apologize.
It was me, but I don't think it's me.
No, it's probably my microphone. What I was saying was, for those people that may not have seen this show the first time around, what type of experiences did you have, either paranormal or travel-related, that you'd like to revisit from your time on Missing in Alaska?
Well, Missing Alaska was an amazing opportunity. Alaska is a different beast. I don't know if there's too many other places in the world like it, you know, maybe the Arctic or Antarctica. But I think with Alaska, is the, you know, you have so many different topographies depending on where you're at. It's so large. It's hard for people in the lower 48 to kind of understand that. Because, you know, you have southeast is a lot like Seattle, but even more rain and rainforest. You know, obviously towards the north, you have flatlands and oceans and rocks and mountains and different, you know, it's pretty crazy how different it is. When you say you're in Alaska, you really have to differentiate where you're at. So that lends to a lot of different types of legends and lore and paranormal things out there. I mean, even the, you know, the tribes up there have their own separate legends and lore, which, you know, in the lower 48, a lot of Native American culture kind of crosses paths. Things stay fairly similar. It's very different in Alaska here, the Alaskan folklore, and how different it could be from different regions. And the tribes very much, you know, don't get along very well, and you see that from their past and their history, which changed the legends and the different types of things that they have going on up there. Really from place to place you went. So you could hear one thing about a legend such as a shapeshifter of some sort, and it might be completely different in a different area.
That's fascinating. I mean, the whole idea that you get to explore these legends and all of these cultures is absolutely amazing. When exploring these type of legends, have you ever found yourself really wrapped into one of them? Was there a certain one that really, really got you?
Well, there was a couple, but I always, one of my ones I kind of like, I shock people with a little bit is our investigation into gnomes. It's fascinated me ever since a child, you know, when they discovered the pygmies in Africa. And the thing about it with Alaska is it wasn't just Alaskan folklore that had, you know, these observations and experiences and eyewitness accounts. It was all different races. I mean, just normal white police officer, you know, normal white, you know, Betty Homemaker, you know, Hispanic man at the, you know, the coroner. I mean, it's just crazy. All the different, it wasn't just one, you know, legend that was just being told amongst the tribe. It was like people literally were experiencing these gnome eyewitness accounts and all across their own cultures. And it's pretty crazy. Even when we were up there in Alaska experiencing and investigating that, you know, there was something that had been filmed in Argentina with little people. Now, I don't know necessarily I want to go as far as to say that they're supernatural. I really think, much like the pygmies in Africa, they could be some, you know, form of inbred, you know, very reclusive tribe that, you know, obviously has gained, you know, certain types of strengths and stuff like that. Much like, you know, Special Olympics. You see, you know, people with, you know, medical issues that have immense strength. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's in our genetic, paths to have these things. So
Jack, with what you do professionally as a private investigator, did the paranormal side, was that something you always wanted, the type of cases that you do wanted to pursue as a hobby, or going through as your professional job, did some of them kind of land on your lap and get your attention and kind of pique your interest?
No, definitely more of the land in your lap kind of thing. Even missing in Alaska was. I investigate pretty much everything that comes my way. If I choose to take the case, the paranormal stuff has really come by accident, and I'm thankful for it. When I was in law enforcement, I always felt like I kind of had a spirit to sense evil, and I know some of that's trained, but I just couldn't understand why some people couldn't feel the things that I felt, And so I kind of developed that, getting to law enforcement at a very young age, and it mostly was on the evil side of things. I do enjoy, as in the private investigation field, sensing good and sensing, other types of feelings other than just evil all the time. But it's definitely a very big part of my job. I usually can sense people right off the bat. I prefer to meet people in person. I prefer to take a long journey just to get to somebody so I can meet them and see them and feel their aura around them. They may not even know that that's my purpose of being there, and sometimes I don't even know that's what I'm doing. I've just gotten so routine in how I conduct my investigations. But it's definitely a part of me. I do get, infrequent, but I do get cases that require my empath, spirit. I don't tell a whole lot of people that I have, but I'm very empathetic to things, especially when it does come to evil and people that have hiding burdens, so to speak. That definitely affects me when I'm around them. I can sense them. And that's always helped me as an investigator.
That's
it's
awesome.
It's that sixth sense almost.
I had a couple questions for you, Jax, related to the show. First off, you got to work with, in my mind, one of the most respected cryptozoologists out there in Ken Gerhard. Do you still stay in touch with Ken and Tommy and the rest of the crew?
Oh, yeah.
Or is that one and done?
You can't go through the experiences like that at all without creating a brotherhood. Tommy and Ken and I are all from three very different walks of life, but brothers nonetheless. When you go through and do the things we've done, seeing the things that we've seen, you got to remember the stuff you see on Missing Alaska, it was 44 minutes, but there's a whole lot of hours upon hours of footage per episode that, people didn't get to see, things that didn't get edited in by the network. So we've experienced a lot. And then just, when you go out and do physical feats, from being in the military, is you go out there and it's camaraderie. You climb a mountain, you're standing on the top, you're the only couple people there looking at that spot. I have, no problem saying that we got to some areas that there probably not too many people have been, if any. Standing on top of certain mountains, getting helicoptered to places, hiking, climbing, whatever it took, spelunking in ice caves. All those things you do with someone, you develop such a camaraderie. And, yeah, we do keep in touch with all of our cameramen and our producers. I just had conversations with about three or four of them last week.
That's awesome. And I know you mentioned earlier about how different the Native American tribes were in Alaska as it relates to their legends and their folklore and their supernatural and mythological creatures, whereas down here, like you said, in the 48, it's kind of a Sasquatch is described the same, no matter what lower 48 tribe you speak of in their lore.
Yes.
Speaking of Sasquatch, in your time on the show, how different were the descriptions of that particular crypto, zoological creature as you went from, members of different tribes?
Well, in some ways, they were described much differently, and in some ways, much more vague. Let me elaborate. So some things that would be very, very, concise on, like, hey, this thing I saw was 12 feet tall. And they would literally, it would have a measurement, and they could point it out to a tree, and it would have an exact measurement, which, you know, in the lower 48, we don't really get that. It kind of varies, or you just get tall, or it was huge. You get, you know, kind of large adverbs added in. You know what I mean? But with them, it was they would have very detailed things. They would also have very detailed accounts of what the Bigfoot did. Now, they don't call it Bigfoot or Sasquatch. They call him Hairy Man. And that was another thing that was very, which led to the vagueness side of it, what I just mentioned, was that it would be very vague on what it looked like. You know, obviously Hairy was a big part of it, but they wouldn't have, you know, lower 48, you have a lot of, you know, look like an ape or a skunk ape or, you know, this or that description or like that. Very vague about what it actually looked like when you tried to press for details. You know, what did the face look like? What did the hands? They didn't really have those kind of answers yet. You know, they could tell you exactly how tall it was. They could tell you what branches it was breaking, how it was breaking them, you know, and that type of thing. They would have a lot of detail too. But then you get to the description, and it'd be much more vague, which I think would lend to their legend, legend and lore that, you know, some of these things would be shape-shifting, some of them be demonic. You know, they had a lot of different stories depending on what tribe you were talking about.
So they actually believed that some of these creatures could be of the demonic nature?
Oh, yeah. Well, you could almost feel that behind a lot of their stories. And you got to remember that, even a lot of religious sides believe, you know, in places like Antarctica, Alaska, you know, and Arctic and stuff like that, they have a lot of darkness, that there is a demonic presence. And so that did have a lot of, they wouldn't necessarily come out and say it, but that would be my take that's a lot of what they're describing, and things like that. You know, you got a lot of the legends and lore, you know, come across a little bit like they were just doing it to scare the kids, you know, keep them away from water, that type of thing. You know, but then you have a lot more behind it. And what was interesting about the Hairy Man was that it would change from place to place that we talked to people about. When we investigated the Portlock incidents down there where the entire town disappeared, it's definitely one I want to revisit. I'm hoping to on my new show. But when we investigated that, it was much more of a very tall presence put to us, more like spirit, yet very, you know, obviously scary enough to scare away a whole town and a large, you know, a large canning facility that had a lot of employees there, you know, and ships wouldn't dock there and, you know, and so it didn't have as much description. Only thing we really would get from that, other than that, was the odor that was always described and how foul it was. But other than that, not a lot could be described.
Hey, I'm going to switch gears a little bit on the conversation. Gary might not want me to go this route, but today, while I'm trying to familiarize myself with some of your background, I took the time to watch the short film, The Survivors. You got any interest in talking about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I love talking about that.
Great.
It'll circle back to my gnomes, though, because I want to go back there. That was filmed in the Pryors, which is a section of mountains between southern Montana and northern Wyoming. And it's very much has the, you know, Mad Max feel to it, a lot of strange rock formations. Almost feels like it could be in Arizona or New Mexico, but it's obviously not. It's up there higher and above the plains. But the Blackfeet Indian there have traded with the gnomes, and there's ice caves under all that barren, desolate rock, and they're believed to live in there. But interesting enough, though, that it's not a presence, you know, the gnomes being a vicious presence or anything like that. Their legends there is that they've traded with them for centuries. And, you know, it's been a peaceful arrangement as far as exchange of goods and a, you know, cohabitation type thing where, you know, you don't mess with me, I don't mess with you type thing. And that's very interesting. I actually have a friend who tried to develop a show there years ago, and it was called Gnome Hunter. And it was there in the Pryors. And it's actually a very popular place for people to do ice caving and, you know, spelunking and stuff like that, because there's a lot of very deep, treacherous caves in there, which, you know, anything could live in there, you know, just like the ocean, we don't really know what's in those type of crevices in the earth. But anyways, getting back to the show, it was, you know, kind of a labor of love with everybody there. One of those things that everybody there did on no pay, and just for the love of the craft. And I think the director of the project has a very grand future, so he used to pursue it because his eye was amazing and what he did on a very, very extreme small budget. You know, I've got nothing but compliments and people asking, when are you guys going to finish filming it for the feature length or make it into a show or this or that? But right now it's just a short film and we're enjoying it going around to film festivals right now. So that's what's going on with that.
Yeah, it definitely for me had that, like I said, that vibe of Road Warrior. And then towards the end, as the son kind of chose the path that he chose and then, you know, walks off with his backpack, I start thinking of the Book of Eli kind of vibe to you know,
oh,
what
yeah.
I mean, like the path
very
of the righteous
so.
Or whatever. So
yep.
Very enjoyable, and I would definitely be interested in seeing a full-length film of it.
Have
well,
you,
so would I. Just prefer not to be dead.
Have you thought about exploring other continents as well as in depth, I mean? I know you mentioned Antarctica earlier, and there's so much mystery surrounding Antarctica right now, and a lot of the conspiracy theories coming out around Antarctica. It seems like it would be a fascinating place to go to and be able to explore the way that you do.
There's really nowhere that I wouldn't go. I don't know if I'd pick the Middle East as a favorite place, but I guess I would go there if I had the opportunity. I wouldn't really turn anything down. Life's too short to turn something down. So if the opportunity arises for me to go somewhere, you know, I'm going to go. I've got an older friend of mine who's not physically well but really wants to take a trip this summer. So we may go to Cambodia, which we're looking into, and doing some of the temples and some of the ancient ruins and stuff there. So, you know, I won't turn anything down. Like I said, life's too short. Got to grasp the opportunities while they're there.
Well, you know, Jack, you're a man of many hats. You've been on a para-TV show, so I guess you fall into the category of a quote-unquote para-celebrity, whatever that truly means. You've been an actor. Obviously, you have your short film out there, hopefully looking to expand that genre. And you also have Journeys with Jax. Talk to my listeners a little bit, our listeners a little bit, about Journeys with Jax, because some of those stories and pictures that I've seen on there are just amazing.
Well, what you're seeing really, though, is just content. And we have filmed a teaser episode. You know, a first episode is planned here shortly. Basically, Journey with Jax is just that. I'm out here doing these investigations, and I tend to hit a lot of crazy places. And people always ask, wish they could be along with the journey with me. You know, but that's, you know, a lot of people do that stuff. There's a lot of digital, you know, marketing for that. If you pull up YouTube anywhere, you're going to find a lot of treasure hunters and, you know, explorers and adventurers. What's different about Journey with Jax is it's an investigative show. So I don't believe there's really anything on TV like this, but it's an investigative adventure show. So we're literally getting a case from a client, and then we basically, you're following along on the adventure of what that case is. And it's, you know, it's not your normal stuff like your domestics, like infidelities and like that. It's literally going to be, you know, the adventure type mysteries, unsolved mysteries, cold cases, occasionally paranormal stuff. We've got a couple of trying to narrow it down right now because we have actually too many, but we've got about 10 different, for lack of a better word right now, insane asylums throughout the United States that we wanted, that we're developing a couple of cases at, you know, and trying to see which one's the best one to film. You know, and so, you know, that obviously is going to have a lot of paranormal activity stuff to it. But they're really just going to vary. Case to case is going to be very different. And we hope to be nationwide and eventually, you know, worldwide once we get enough support. It's definitely out of its infancy right now. It's been kind of a labor of love between myself and GCM Media out of Phoenix to get it off the ground. We wanted something that was real. That was very important to us. We've had offers to get it picked up, but they want to change things. They want to add in a lot of scripting. They want to, you know, they want the flashlight and scream and run type stuff. And, you know, I'm not into that. I actually don't want to do that. I'd rather just not be on TV than do that, you know. And so You know, for purposes of what I want to do, and as long as I have, you know, control over the project, it's going to be as real as possible. You know, there are some things that are TV you have to do, you know, just to get it to go through and get it done in a in production value. But it's going to be as real as possible. So, you know, we recently just had a very, you know, awesome meeting in New York City with some opportunities for the show. And another opportunity just popped up in L.A. for the show with some backing, and we're exploring different avenues because our goal is to keep the, you know, true to form as possible and as much control over it as possible. And that's the difficulty these days because a lot of places just want to buy it and they want to control it and own it. And with my name on it, I don't want it to be, you know, turned into some fabricated thing and you know, a show that's just another season then and gone, you know. I like something that's long-standing, and I like people to be able to follow along the journey. You know, one thing I'm missing in Alaska that was really hard is, like I mentioned earlier, is we had so much film and so much parts of the investigation that nobody got to see. And it didn't make the storyline that the network, you know, developed for television. So, and that was hard. I wish those pieces could have been put out there in different avenues, you know, so many avenues now for that stuff. For extra material, and you know, if you're interested in a certain part of the investigation, to see what else I did, and that type of thing. So that's the goal. We filmed our first episode in Arizona, and a place that's going to blow most people away that it even exists. And I'm excited about it. And we've got another really great opportunity with contacts of mine in Montana that we're set to film, and we're in the research mode on. In Northern Nevada. So those are the three we've got planned right now. And then a couple in Pennsylvania and New York are in production mode also.
Do you notice that there's one area of the country, or would you say it's broken out pretty evenly, where you find more places and more types of areas to go to that either have paranormal activity or have, you know, the histories behind them? I grew up in Boston, and Boston is rich in history. Lived in Salem, Massachusetts,
yeah.
You know, the huge paranormal community. It just seems like there's certain parts of the country that really seem, you know, the paranormal, I guess you could say, gravitates to, that the unknown gravitates to, and a lot of opportunity for you to go out there and explore.
There's definitely a lot of places like that, you know, that have had a lot. I think you also, what you have with, say, an area like Salem is an area of great strife. You know, you have a lot of people lose their lives. You know, a lot of life lost, and who knows what energy is still there. You know, and that's what I think you run to. I don't know necessarily if it puts itself to certain areas. You know, I think it's more of what caused that area to be there, such as a battle, a murder, those type of things that keep potential things there or to gravitate to that area. Have you ever noticed, like, you know, those spots where, say, maybe something was rumored to have happened, and then all of a sudden it becomes a, you know, a good destination for, you know, you hear about Satanists or, you know, paranormal travelers or all this other stuff, and then you keep finding more and more stuff out about that area. Well, did that affect those people?
Mm-hmm.
But I got a question about that. Not so much on the historical side. I think East Coast, you have long-standing areas, much like you're talking about with Salem. I think battlefields, I think going to places like, you know, long-standing insane asylums that have been there for a couple hundred years, where you continually have that activity and energy and evil brought into those places with that presence. I think that's the difference, what you're looking at there. And that's just my opinion. Obviously, Ken would have a lot more opinion on that and evidence. I'm mostly going by feel, because that's my job, is to make sure I keep state of my investigative process. And when I use things like my empath abilities, it's more to see what direction I'm going to. Does it feel right? You know, those gut instincts, those things
oh,
with weapons like that. So that's what I'm referring to. You know, and I don't you know, create systematic charts and figure out, you know, okay, well, there's been 15 sightings here and this and that. That's not necessarily what I do, because mine's more case specific. Mm-hmm.
Are we still there?
Yeah, I think
Joe,
you're breaking
think
up
we might
us.
Be losing you.
Dex.
I'm here. I can
oh,
do
there
it.
Is.
It's breaking up a little bit. As I said before, so this over the last few days, I've been going through your blog a lot, reading all the stories, learning about you. And one of the stories that stood out for me that I think would be fitting for this radio show of paranormal stuff, if you would feel like talking about it, the one you titled Grasshopper, are you familiar with that? Or the one where you're driving in Montana down Interstate 15?
I'm not too far from that now, a few hours away.
Okay. Yeah, but you know which blog entry I'm referencing then?
Oh, yeah. Yep, I know the old Grasshopper spot. I stop there every time I can. It's a strange little pull out there. I didn't really tell people about that for a long time. It was a very strange personal experience of mine, just being out there in the middle of nowhere and pulled off the side of the road and it's one of those experiences that's almost hard to put pen to paper on what you saw. Because you almost second guess it. But for me, I was standing there and there was cows on a pasture and it was a very bright moon. And you just sensed something there and something above you, which is always strange as humans because we don't look up. We definitely don't look up very much. And, so I'm sitting there feeling this feeling and I look up and I don't see anything but, the brightest stars you could possibly see. A nice clear Montana, almost northern Idaho, night. And I'm sitting there, and then all of a sudden I look back at the cows, and the shadow that passed, going by was immensely large, like it was much closer to the ground. But I looked up at the sky looking for some sort of plane or something like that, and could not see anything in the sky at all. But the shadow that was going across the ground was huge. I mean, it was, probably 10 times larger than the cow that it was flying over. Again, this happened, decently fast. It wasn't moving extremely fast speed. It was enough for me to, be able to recognize, what I was looking at. And the shape it had was very much shaped like a manta ray. I had never heard of anything like that. Took me a long time to get the gumption up to ask Ken about it and come to find out. Apparently, I'm not the only one who's seen flying manta rays or in my case, shadows of. So no idea what that was or anything. I would have to give that to you guys as far as deciphering what I might have seen. But the interesting thing was going back there and then coming across these really strange three rocks and then coming across this transient out there at a different time, telling me, a missing girl had been out there, and that's where they had located her, and they had no idea how she got there, and, it's just a very, very interesting story, and just that one that just didn't make sense. It's like, why do all these things that don't make sense happening right in this little turnoff off the freeway?
Yeah, I think it's like you said before, too. I think it's just the energy of the area itself, is charged in a different way.
Yeah.
Well, Jax,
sure.
As I said earlier, you've done a lot of things in your life and in your career. One of the things that I have mad respect for you for is you're a man of faith. You're proud of your faith. You're strong in your faith. Has that presented any challenges for you, either in your PI work or your entertainment and TV work at all, being someone who was very open about their faith?
Not so much in the PI world, because I think people want to have a investigator they trust. And I think that just helps go to the added side of trust. Not that people on religious faiths or beliefs or anything like that have violated trust, but I think it does help for the most part. I think obviously just look at Facebook or anything with the news or Oscars or anything like that. Obviously, having a faith right now is under attack, with the entertainment industry, and I do say that our country, media-wise and entertainment-wise, has missed the boat. They've banked on that everybody feels just like them, and you know, I don't even know if they're at 50%. They would like to feel like they're at 100% as far as everybody being like that. And, you know, what I've gotten as I've been taking my show around to, you know, get support and stuff like that is that there's a whole side of the entertainment industry that's not happy. They feel like they've been, you know, passed over. You know, some stand up and have a voice, but for the most part, they're kind of overshouted, if you know what I mean, within the media. You know, if somebody says something on The View, it's blasted everywhere. You know, but if a conservative actor or something like that makes a comment, it's not put out there unless it's shown in a negative light. So it's definitely a negative side. For a long time, I've always kept my politics off social media as much as possible, and just not create wars. It's not that I don't stand for my faith. It just has no benefit to having people bicker when they're there, when they're supposed to just be there enjoying whatever product you made, or supporting you as an actor. So, or any part of the entertainment industry. So it's definitely hard with that. In the paranormal world, yes. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't have as many beliefs in God and you know, heaven and hell, or maybe just hell, or there's no God. A lot more atheist run-ins. The understanding's a little less, but it's never for me anyways been at a point where it's confrontational, like it is in the entertainment industry. Because it can get confrontational. You know, somebody finds out that you supported Trump in the entertainment industry, you're going to be hearing the earful, and all of a sudden the direction of your conversation's gone completely off the railroad tracks. You know, which it shouldn't be like that. This is America. We should all be able to support each other in our beliefs of differing beliefs. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
And I think it's great that you do have that faith, and, you know, it is so strong. I noticed with the paranormal, and it seems there's a lot of similarities between paranormal investigator and private investigator, just in the way things are viewed when you're looking at either us at cases or you at doing certain investigations and exploring. But I was going to say, with the faith aspect of it, I noticed I became a lot stronger in my faith as my paranormal, if you want to call it, career has gone on. Have you noticed that your faith has increased, or has it always been as strong as it's been? What do you feel about that?
I would say it's probably, you know, as far as, you know, anything with the paranormal, it's pretty much stayed the same for me. I have my views, and I'm not saying they're right or wrong. They're my views. So, you know, I'm always willing to listen to evidence from all sides. And that's
sure.
What I mean, they change me. You know, I think I even discussed on this show that I was on a while ago was that, you know, I believe a lot of our paranormal and our cryptid sightings are actually of the demonic and angelic variety. I know there's a lot of theologians who are out there who have the same beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them, you can even take it back as far as, you know, post Garden of Eden, with demonic breeding. And they can actually do some historical biblical stuff with that. I'm not going that far. I think a lot of what stuff we see is demonic. And if your mind's open to it, angelic, and I think those things can easily be explained for a lot of stuff. Now, again, a lot of people like to jump in and get in an argument with me. I'm not saying I don't believe in ghosts. I'm not saying I don't believe in spirits. I'm just saying that I think a lot of what we see could be more on the in the categories of demonic or angelic. And
real quick,
you know, whether, but
go ahead, brother. Finish your thought.
No, I'm done.
I was going to say real quick before Brian jumps in here with his question, what I took from those couple answers is that I think, and this is just my opinion, that Jax Atwell thinks the hosts of The View are demons.
I think so. I could be wrong.
I could be wrong. That's just my interpretation.
I don't know, but I don't know if they are personally, but there's probably a lot sitting on their shoulders, if you know what I mean.
That famous
painting with it's, you know, I think Renaissance painting of some sort with a person standing in the middle with all the demons and angels fighting above them. I'm trying to remember what they call that painting, but I always, when I see people like Joy Bearhart, I look at her and I'm like, you know, if we just can't see it right now, but there's a serious thing all around her, you know. And then you see a photo of her. I saw one the other day of her and then one of Sarah Palin, who's, whether you like her or not, I believe she's a pretty faithful, godly person. The photos of them right next to each other, it's like you can look at them, and they're relatively close in age. I mean, within a decade. And you look at them, though, and you're like, wow. I mean, you can almost see the evil in one and evil in the who's who. But, you know, it's pretty crazy. And, you know, that, the show The View has just completely gotten off the railroad tracks. It used to be a decent show for women, and that is now, I think what it is, they've just gotten so, you know, when people get into their, I don't know what you want to call it, they get their, you know, thinking that their ship's better than everyone else. Sorry to do that on the radio. But I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, you already did. It's all good.
we all do it, right? But, you know, the celebrity starts thinking that they're not, right? You know, that they're better than everyone else when, you know, we all came into this world the same and we all go out the same. And I think a lot of that has to do with where Hollywood's at. You know, obviously many people disdain for the Hollywood product.
Aren't
you just tired of sports people and entertainers telling you what they think about religion and politics and stuff? Like, why don't they just...
Everybody's got an opinion and everybody's got a
swing out
a
baseball
button.
And just...
Yeah. What about these kids eating Tide Pods and trying to tell us, you know, what we need to do in politics and how we need to act in schools and so forth? It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, I think our society in many ways right now has very open minds to, you know, seeing right is wrong and wrong is right.
Yep.
And if you guys are very familiar with the Book of Revelations,
End
times are pretty clear that stuff like that starts happening. Sometimes, you know, we're heads on, I don't understand this. It's completely upside down, how people are supposed to act and think. I mean, I don't have to keep getting on political tangents, but, you know, a gun doesn't kill people, you know?
Nope.
I don't care how many guns you have. You could have 10,000 guns. You can only carry probably two. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That's a great point.
So I got a couple things. From the conversation a little bit previously, we were talking about your faith and entertainment business and being your professional side. First thing came to my mind is like, well, I hope you never get the case. It was like the movie 9mm with Nicolas Cage, if you know what I'm talking about. I don't know if you're familiar with that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be wild. But anyways, back into where we're talking about the kind of sort of politics side and the youth and their influences and stuff. Your blog you did about the millennials, I got to say, actually opened my eyes up a little bit because I kind of fell into the category of, you know, these damn millennials don't want to move out of the house and all the negative stuff that we say about them. But you put it in terms I'd never thought about before, is that with them moving away from materialistic stuff like our generation had, you know, who had the biggest house, the nicest car, and, you know, the most expensive watch. I really appreciated the aspect or the perspective of, are the millennials, you know, correcting the ship on where we were getting as a society of materialistic things? And I think that also leads a little bit into the religious aspects of false idols. So I wanted to see what you kind of wanted to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, sometimes your best thoughts are over food or coffee, right? I mean, I really had that kind of epiphany over this, you know, me and pop millennials. And, you know, I just got thinking about it, and you start really thinking about it. It's easy for us to slam some of the things, you know, as millennials do, and some of them are deserving of that. But it doesn't mean they're all bad, and we're not supposed to despise our youth. You know, that's pretty clear in the Bible that I believe in. And, you know, there are good things, and some things can be righted by by, you know, where they're at. And they're not as much keeping up with the Joneses, just, you know, looking out for nostalgic things, things that have value. The algorithms that a lot of companies are using now, because millennials are obviously, you know, increased in number and baby boomers are obviously decreasing in number, are really changing to go more with those things that grab your heartstrings, as opposed to, you know, the biggest Mercedes, the best house, all that stuff, you know, that maybe generations in the past have grabbed a hold of. You know, the car commercial, even just notice a car commercial, it used to be, oh, here's the awesome car, look how fast it goes around these mountain corners. And now look what you have, you know, a celebrity with a good voice, you know, giving a inspirational speech or a talk while he's driving, and maybe in a whole lot less of the car. But that's pulling on the heartstring type things that the millennials are bringing in. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. It's a thing to readjust our thinking, you know, that we've been wrong on it for generations.
It's a great point. It really is. I hadn't thought of it that way either, Jax. So it's just hard to get around the Tide Pod eating aspect of it, I think, for me. But you definitely, there's some sage wisdom there from what you were saying. So now I'm going to have to totally reconsider my viewpoint on that. Because I think we tend to get a little jaded, when it comes, like you said, to millennials. But I did have one other question that kind of relates to the overall aspect of Jax at Well. Being as you are a private investigator, and I'm sure some of your work requires you to kind of blend in when tailing people or following people and whatnot, since you've been now involved in, you know, TV and the entertainment industry, have you started to get recognized more now than you did before?
No, not really. I mean, occasionally it'll happen, and it's usually out of the blue, but for the most part, no. I mean, I think I've gotten pretty good as far as my work goes investigatively, because I stand out as far as an investigator anyways, built tattoos, beard, that type of thing. I know a lot more investigators are older or not quite as in shape, or maybe a little, just for lack of a better term, milquetoast. And that word a little better, and those guys tend to blend in very well. But believe it or not, the science of blending in is actually more about angles and lighting for when you're following people, and also just understanding how people observe, how you're approaching, but how are they observing? Different person to person. You notice right off the bat how some people can look around or check their backside, or if they've got kids looking around them, that type of thing. And so it's just more of a science that I've developed. And I think that just kind of keeps me out of place while I'm following somebody and those type of things. But now, no, it doesn't really affect me. In fact, I used to always play the card, try to be more covert, and when I did undercover work for the DEA and stuff like that, I was very, very covert. No one knew that I was a private investigator, but last few years, I've just kind of flipped the script, and I'm out there now. I've been on television. I'm a recognizable investigator that's been out there, and taking a little different view with it, if you will, with my marketing. When I do market, is that hey, I'm already out here, and here I am. But it doesn't seem to affect me on my cases. So far, knock on wood.
If I could steal some thunder from my compadre Huxley. Here's the $6 million question when it comes to blending in. Have you ever been mistaken for Randy Macho Man Savage?
Oh, you did.
Well, oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I used to get it a little more when I was younger. I'd probably say about 5-7 years ago, I used to get a lot more, especially when I kept a little better tan, and maybe when I had a little more hair on my head. Not as much anymore. It's really odd sometimes what I'll get. I'll usually get asked if I'm a UFC fighter, which I don't really understand that one, but I'll get asked that one. Randy Macho Man, for several good years, I got that one a lot. But I don't know if it stopped just because people don't know who he is anymore because he's passed away or what.
I got to jump in there real quick, Jax, and clear something up. So we were chatting through Messenger, and I put up one of your pictures next to Macho Man, and it, not in his flamboyant colors, but more of his subdued look. And I was like, holy crap, do you see the resemblance? And Mr. Gary there, that wants to steal my thunder, goes, nah, kinda. So he wasn't even a believer.
Well, there, maybe I should be get cast as him for a movie on his life.
Or if your next episode of The Journey with Jax, if you could just have a Slim Jim while you were eating it, that might just be gonzo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe slap Gary upside the head with a Slim Jim. You know, and give me a, oh, yeah.
So looking at your personal career as a PI, I know everybody probably always asks you, what was your favorite investigation you did on Missing in Alaska? And, you know, what was your favorite place you visited? What do you think was your most exciting case as a PI that you can talk about? I know you're under a lot of NDAs, but I didn't know if you had something, you know, that stuck out in your mind.
Well, I mean, I can talk a lot about it, and hopefully someday I've made 4 attempts at writing into a book, but I just never get it finished. But I had a unique experience about 7 years ago. As a licensed civilian private investigator to work for the DEA. I had a former narcotics sergeant who went to work for the DEA and brought me in on a few cases, and one case that ended up being undercover for, about 5 to 7 months or right around in there. And that experience was, like none other. Nobody really can say that they've ever really done that. It was a very unique experience. As a licensed investigator, I didn't really know this at the time, but, they can get brought in by feds, and they're basically called mercenaries, because as a civilian, you could get away with a lot more than you can as law enforcement. Law enforcement's got oaths and laws and, things they've got to toe the line on, but a civilian could get away with it. There's a lot of things that, and stuff like that that were very unique. And, I'd always read books about undercover, guys with the Hells Angels or, stuff like that when I was, always had interest in reading all those kind of books. And, it wasn't that extreme, but it was a pretty dangerous situation, especially when I was undercover for a long time. And that was having a second life, really, being this other person. And that was extremely unique to my experience as a private investigator. I don't do as much of it anymore. In fact, in the last few years, I've turned them down. I get calls occasionally for my expertise in it, but it's really hard to keep that light switch turned off and turned on, turned off and off. And separating that was part of life. And I'm not really interested in going back to that. But it was definitely a unique experience. That hopefully someday I'll have it into a book so you guys can read it.
That's cool. No, it sounds like something, not everybody gets to experience. So just to chalk it up to, something you did in life that no one else got to do. So that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. Undercover work has always been, when I did narcotics in law enforcement, I still, I'm working and I had a case in Chandler, Arizona, that was doing some undercover work for a narcotics case. And, I do enjoy doing the undercover work. It's fun. It's a lot like acting, In fact, I did that before acting, and really, if you think about it, it's most extreme acting because it's life or death.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Or has that potential, anyways.
So, Jax, as your sons, obviously continue to get older, do you see in the next decade or whatever becoming Jax Atwell and Sons investigation? You think your boys are going to follow in your footsteps and jump in there with you?
They seem to have, my older two seem to have some interest in it. They've been fortunate enough, they've gotten to go on a lot of cases with me and experience stuff. Obviously on the safer ones I've taken them with and stuff. I have that hope. I'm not quite sure. I never would press them into it. Being an investigator, I know I get this, the million-dollar thing all the time. Everyone, I should have been a private investigator. I did this, and this. I'm so good at, whenever, my husband's lying, I know, especially when you get it from females. But it's really, I think being a good investigator is a sixth sense, and you have to enjoy what you're doing. I absolutely love what I do. I get to see places all over. My cases take me everywhere. A lot of people don't like that. A lot of people like, you know, going home and sitting on the couch with the family and, you know, having those, all that, you know, the, you know, 8-to-5 life, you know, and being an investigator is definitely not an 8-to-5 life. I'm very much, you know, 1 minute to the next, you know, I literally just landed. Sorry, guys. Yeah, cut off there for a second.
There you are.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I had another call coming in. You know, I think I would love them to do it, but I think I would need to know that they loved doing it and they actually had the calling to it. You know what I mean? Because it's not an easy life. It's hard on relationships. It's hard on your children. You're all over the place. Plus, you're having to deal with other people's problems. But you guys know in the paranormal world, you can take on a lot of other people's stuff and bring that home with you, which, you know, can cause problems. So, you know, the short answer is I would absolutely love if they did, but I would never press them into it.
Cool.
Well, I know, Jax, we were talking off air a couple of weeks ago. You were in New York working on some future projects that you couldn't really share a whole lot of information with at that point. Are you able to disclose any more about that, or is that still
No, can't really talk about it. I mostly had to do a journey with Jax. We had some opportunities there, some meetings with some larger production companies to team up with. They wanted to see our first episode we'd filmed, and we had face-to-face meetings with, you know, upper management and vice presidents and those kind of things that most people don't really get. I kind of, to be honest with you, probably got it because of Missing in Alaska and, you know, the contacts I made through that. So, you know, we'll see what happens with them, but regardless, they were great opportunities, and I'm always going to walk through those doors if they're open, you know, and you learn from them no matter what happens.
Absolutely.
You know, taking a page from your book, Gary, I was talking to him about this before, is there's so many places, not even just going out of the country or even going state to state, you could go city to city, and everybody seems to have some type of local legend going on. And we were thinking about getting something together and where we could explore those local legends and film that. I mean, it definitely seems like something, you know, that on a small scale of what you're doing. And it seems like it would be a grand time.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it would be. And you just, sometimes those things kind of domino effect, and you just keep finding more and more stuff out. And they can really take you down some awesome rabbit trails.
Oh, yes, the rabbit holes. They get too deep sometimes, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Especially when there's tight spots at the bottom of them.
I said, you have one of those stories off the top of your head where you went into it for one thing and that rabbit hole led you somewhere completely different?
Well, I've got an active cold case that I'm still working up in northern Arizona, and that's just been one domino after another. I mean, there was a murder that happened in 1888 of three guys, and as the investigation has gone on over the years, more and more stuff has been found out. You know, each of the guys that have been murdered has its own domino effect stories that have, you know, how they got to that point and their backgrounds and their history and the things that had gone on with their families. And the rabbit trails off of that, you'd be talking about for, you know, forever. And some of that stuff, you know, is still ongoing. And I still just can't believe how much information we keep finding out and, you know, how those three guys got to that one spot to get murdered that evening, and then all the players involved. It's definitely an interesting case and something that it'll probably never be solved just because of the time, you know, since it happened and lack of record keeping and all that type of thing. But it's an interesting case nonetheless, and those cold cases can really take you down rabbit trails, that's for sure.
Gotcha. What's one of the longest cold cases you've invested time on?
Well, it's probably the one I just spoke of. Basically, you know, these three guys were hung because they want, you know, in short, to keep it cheap and short, they were hung for their property. They had this there's actually been movies done. There's an old couple old westerns on this. Up in northern Arizona, there's a stretch of land where there was actually a war between sheep herders and cattle ranchers, because they used to only with so many routes how to run your cattle or your sheep back down to the valley, being in Phoenix. And that created all kinds of wars, you know, which is great Western fodder. But there are actually a lot of, like this case, real true stories that came out of that. In this case, kind of mirroring politics today, but on a smaller scale, with people being brought there to participate in it. That way they all could be blackmailed. Just another one of the rabbit trails that went off there. Because you're wondering, these three guys got murdered by a group of over 30 people. And they were all high in politics and stuff. And they all got brought there by, a sheriff and a deputy sheriff and what I like to call the Clinton Foundation, because that's what they really mirrored themselves like. And they made a lot of people be involved, and they had control over them. And it's got a lot of politics, because a lot of those families that were there are still families involved in high business and politics in Arizona today. So the story has really had the boot on it, being squashed for many, many, obviously decades, well over a century now.
Wow. So like the one of them out in the woods, big politician stuff to see on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Jack, did you find that when the show first came out, you know, obviously it was a new pair TV show at this time and had a really interesting spin on it. Were you welcomed into the paranormal community, and did you receive like invitations to do the convention circuit and speaking appearances and whatnot?
As far as you said, we're missing Alaska.
Yeah, when you did that show, were you?
Yeah,
welcomed into the community?
Yeah. I mean, I felt like I was, pretty well received. Much like Ken, I think people want things to be real, but they want it also to be proven to be real. I think that people don't want to believe in things that are hokey or fake. So being able to, say no on this and no on that, okay, maybe this could be plausible, this direction's good, those type of directions to people, I think we're important enough, and Ken's a lot like that anyways, with his cryptid investigations. And so just staying true to form, I always believe there's two sides to every coin, and so I'm never going to just, you completely miss half of an investigation. So I'm always going to bear witness to whatever it is and try to figure out if it's something that has to do with our investigation or not. So I think, since I went into things with an open eye, I was, pretty welcomed into the community.
Was there anything in, with the Alaska opportunities that you had, where you actually just stood back for a second and said, there's no fucking way, you just don't believe it right off, and it's not really a show you want to do, but you end up doing it. Was there any cases that that's come up with you?
There's more of moments, not of cases, moments in the cases. They were kind of like, little pieces of things, such as the one we did on the legend of the Headless Horseman,
mm-hmm.
Who had, pretty much we kind of determined we're going after people messing with the earth. Looking at the photos later, that later seeing that saber above my head was pretty shocking.
Wow.
Stuff like that. It was more little things like that, or, looking out over a glacier and seeing heat waves coming out of wormholes, that type of thing. Those were little things, just unexplainable things I'm not going to try to – I'm going to look at and see if there's a mathematical or scientific, thing to explain it. And if I can, I'm not going to, say that I didn't just see that. It's just, some things in life you just have to say, I don't know. I'm glad I witnessed it, though,
How did you feel on that show you did with the harp and, you know, the what goes on with harp and the possible the mind control and such? Something that you bought into in that?
Oh, yeah. But my theory with harp, at least the Alaskan harp, is that much like the SR-71, which was one of the most amazing, you know, planes ever made, it could still go out right now and do Mach 3, but it's very old, and it's been mothballed. I think the HARP facility could probably have, be in the technology of something in a van, maybe even something as small as a briefcase. You know what I mean? And I could be exaggerating, but I think that technology has to have had massive scientific overhaul in, what, 5 decades since it started? So, I mean, it was started in the late 60s. So I think it would definitely be in a smaller product. I think they just don't – I mean, with something that large, there's nothing really you can do with it. And it, if you sold it to a private party as a government, you'd probably have all kinds of issues with it. I'm sure it's full of asbestos and lead and radioactive materials. So it just has to sit there. And it is guarded, and there are – it does appear to be some things are maintained, you know what I mean? But is it a working facility? I think you could probably flip the switch and turn it on, but I don't know necessarily that means that it's being used. Again, much like the SR-71, which it could, you could push it out on the runway and, you know, do some maintenance on it, and it would probably take off and you fly around and land it. But yes, the technology is definitely believable. You have the extremes of, you know, the guy in our show had some foil hats to protect your brains, you know, to are they just affecting weather and stuff like that? You know, who knows? I'm not a scientist. I do believe they obviously tried to, much like the Nazis, to tinker with things that they probably shouldn't have been tinkering with, and maybe they still are. My gut says, you know, with Russia and China, that we are still, because you'd have to at least keep the science up to where they are, or else we'd just be ran over. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Sort of a unknown Cold War with science. I would imagine would that category be going on that the public might never know about.
Well,
I got a question for you for the Phoenix location. I was out there for 7 years and stuff. So the investigative side of you, have you ever spent any time looking for the Lost Dutchman's mine, or do you have any interest in trying to find it?
I've read about it. I have never actually gone out there. To be honest with you, I've lived in Arizona for, you know, well over a decade. And, you know, it's about, oh, shoot, I'm getting close to 2 decades now. But I just have never really enjoyed doing much in Arizona until those last couple of years. So I've been all over the place lately exploring Arizona. Most of my exploring, I would, you know, live in Arizona and then go explore somewhere else. But Arizona has a ton to offer. I recently discovered the town of Bisbee, which is basically southeast Arizona, down towards Sierra Vista. And, Matt, what a just a crazy town that is out there, and you're like, I'm like, blown away. Like, this is still here. Right? It's this old mining town. Everything's still intact. There's people living there. Kind of an artsy feel to it now, but just in the middle of nowhere, you know, and, you know, they've got great history, a lot of paranormal stuff. There's over 4,000 miles of tunnels under the city and in the Queen Anne mine and all that stuff. So you got a lot of, you know, stuff supposedly let out from the deep, so to speak, you know, with the mining, which you get a lot of that with mining. And it's, you know, the stuff beneath it. And then ghost stories. The Queen Anne hotels had, I think, 14 or 15 different ghosts that have been, they've been able to, you know, outline and document that reside there. So it's, you know, little places like that I'm really starting to discover. Like I said, that cold case I've got in northern Arizona, you know, there's a hangman's tree there for where those young men were hung. You know, and it's, the tree's still there, and it's been confirmed by an arborist and everything. There's a lot of places like that I've found in Arizona that, you know, people think of Arizona cactus and desert, but it's got actually all five of the different types of desert, including high desert. So you've got, you know, very wooded and pine areas, and you know, obviously Grand Canyon being a big piece of Arizona, but a lot to explore there, that's for sure, that most people don't even know it's in their backyard if you live in Phoenix.
Yeah, that's for sure. You there, Gary?
I think we might have lost Gary.
I think maybe. Go ahead, Joe.
We hijacked the show too much, I think, Bri.
Yeah, I think so. I think we lost Gary.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a question. You're on the phone now with me and Ed, who are both conspiracy theory guys. We love the conspiracy theories and the conversations of, so I'm going to hijack the permit that Gary gets back. With your background in law enforcement and private investigating and working at the undercover stuff, it's a little bit of the political question, and maybe it's too soon kind of thing. The whole Las Vegas conspiracy of the shooter, that there was more than one shooter, can you put a little bit of information to that, as in that conspiracy so far-fetched, or is there reason to believe that maybe there was more than one shooter in Vegas?
I didn't catch which shooting, guys.
The shooting on Las Vegas Strip where the guy up in the hotel shot down into the crowd?
Oh, I don't know that anybody needs to hear my opinion on it. I, you know, it's one of the things, you can hear so many different things, and if you're on social media, you can get your mind really warped about stuff. Was there another shooter or not? That's, you know, it is a lot of ammunition and guns he was able to get up there, but would it have been impossible? No, but sure. What I don't understand is people's responses, and in an area like Nevada, excuse me, where so many people have guns,
mm-hmm.
how, you know, there wasn't people in the crowd returning fire. I mean, like, just strange stuff like that would occur before that many people died. You know what I mean? And it also went over, you know, it went over some time. You know what I mean? So, like, people's reactions and that many people just get kicked off. After the surprise part of it was over. So how does this guy, security in the hotel, not get there, you know, faster? I mean, there's a lot of questions you have like that. I mean, I have it about the Parkland thing here, too. I've read a bunch of different stuff that really makes you a question. You know, some of the other school shootings I've seen stuff on, too. You know, you start wondering, start really going government conspiracy theory about a lot of stuff. You know, some things... It's hard because it would, with a country our size that goes coast to coast, you know, it's pretty easy to manipulate the masses. I wish, you know, I could get a firsthand experience and say something like, you know, the Las Vegas shooting, so I could give you guys a better, you know, no way that happened. But I've never been in one of those situations. You know, the one in Vegas that you're talking about, just to me, the length of time the guy had to keep plugging people. With no one reacting, especially with it being in Vegas. I mean, you know, none of these things have happened in Arizona, knock on wood. I just can't imagine. I mean, everybody's got a gun on them. You know, usually when an armed robbery happens, the armed robber ends up dead. You know what I mean? Like, not usually by law enforcement's hands. It's usually by, you know, some grandpa who parked his truck and got out and blew the guy away with his .45. You know, so, and Nevada's no different. So, you know, how this guy was able to do that, I don't know. I mean, I think you buy into a lot of stuff. Now, you start going down the Bundy Trail, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, you know, out there in Oregon and stuff, you know, with the guy who was killed by the FBI. I mean, I've talked to enough people investigatively on that to know that was definitely a government cover-up. And going into a bigger conspiracy, I'll go even bigger than you guys here, and I'll go even with Missing Alaska. So in places like Alaska and Montana, Washington, you have people with homesteads that have permits, you know, 99-year U.S. forestry permits. Well, a lot of people don't know is the government's been secretly and slowly revoking those for odd reasons, loopholes within the laws, things like that. And if you go into Hillary Clinton's mentor's, I call it the Book of Satan, but his book he wrote on how to control a population, and basically her handbook and the far left Democrats' handbook on re-educating the populace, all
yep.
that stuff. But one of the big points that they have in there is moving people from urban areas back into cities where they can mm-hmm. where they can be controlled. And that's a big part of what they've been doing for decades now. And you have people that have lived on, you know, generationally on homesteads that are being pushed out of them, being arrested for silly things like collecting rainwater and stuff like that. You know, it's pretty scary, to be honest with you. But those are all, you know, end of the world type things that are literally occurring. And there's evidentiary proof of it. You can keep going with that aspect. If you look at areas like Seattle and Denver, which would be hubs nearest metro areas to places like, say, Alaska or Montana, you know, and both those cities, you know, it's pretty factual that they could be set up any minute with, you know, camps, FEMA camps,
oh, absolutely.
Prison of war camps. And you don't tell me those aren't strategically placed there to pull people out of the mountains and the hills and throw them into those kind of camps. I think it's a huge cautionary tale for many people up there.
I'm sure we could go on for hours about this, but Gary would kill us. So I think he's back on with us. Gary, you with us?
Oh, well, sounds like he's struggling, so I'll go ahead and keep going a little bit.
All right, keep going with it.
So kind of where you were just going, you know, you're talking about Hillary's mentor there and everything. I kind of feel that the backlash in the media, and, you know, you talk like The View and the other shows, where they're just bombarding us with their liberal agenda. My kind of thought is I think her losing the presidency was an unforeseen shock to them, and they're scrambling to keep that grip on us so they can, you know, think they can get back in there and keep leading the sheep down the road the direction they want to go. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I support that statement 100%. I think they thought they had that, you know, lock, stock, and barrel, but God had other plans. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we've reached a point in society where some of the youth and even some of the older adults are now openly saying, we want socialism, or, you know, maybe communism isn't that bad of a deal. And I'm thinking, wow, have they really got a hold of us through social media and regular media agenda to get people to start saying that? Like, I never thought in my life I would see a presidential candidate almost make it to the primary who openly said he's a socialist and have
yeah.
that many people supporting him.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, you just go into the history of the Democratic Party, and I don't want any of your listeners to get the idea that I'm just down on Democrats, because I truly believe that the far left and far right are the same, one and the same.
Yeah.
Because left are Arizona John McCain, who I hope burns in hell, which
oh,
he
yeah.
will someday, trust me.
Yeah.
You know, and same with Jeff Flake, who have fleeced the citizens of Arizona for resources and unheard amount of money. All, you know, they're the same. McCain, Hillary Clinton, exact same. They both have sold themselves to their soul to the devil. And I'm not getting conspiracy. I'm getting investigative with evidence. But it's bigger than all of us. And the only thing that really can solve that, guys, is God. I mean, it really is. I mean, those people's plan, they had that plan laid out, and it was a foolproof plan to get her into office, and God had other ideas. Whether that was awakening people that normally don't vote to get out and vote. But whatever it was, you know, I don't know that it's Trump's hand. I think Trump was just the conduit to be used to stop something incredibly evil to happen.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, you know, the fact that you're saying it's God's, basically, I believe the same thing. And I believe it's a bigger war than just a country type of scenario. We're talking about the, you know, the eternal war, if you will, of the good versus evil. And we're living it today. And like you said, you look in Revelations and see the signs coming from Revelations and all. And I sound like a tinfoil hat right now, I know. But you're absolutely right when you start speaking on some of these. It's time for people to wake up out there, and there's a lot of proof out there, but nobody wants to really take advantage of that knowledge.
So very true. And then when you present it, they just make you sound like a crackpot. And just start yelling and screaming over you. Sometimes that's all it takes for some people, you know, so they don't hear the actual message.
Well, even Hollywood likes to, you know, when to portray that person, you know, the belief in the Bible and the rapture and, you know, the end times and all that, that person in Hollywood is always the, you know, teeth missing, scraggly, homeless-looking guy holding the sign saying, "The end is near," or whatever, and it's the punchline to the joke. So, you know, it's like they do everything they can to say, "Oh, if you happen to be that guy, well, this is what he looks like." You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
But I want to kind of get back where we're at before. Talking about your show and your experiences and stuff, because me and Ed will drag you down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, we don't want to do that to you.
Yeah.
So, I'm pretty sure the Illuminati cut me off, guys, because I'm finally back on here and running.
There
he is. Gary's back.
You know, about this conspiracy theory, you brought up one of the biggest ones. That was a big conspiracy theory. What happened with this in Alaska was hard. Because when we brought, I can't remember his name, Dr. Berger, I could be butchering his last name. His dad was the famous missing politician that went missing, and him and his brother, the fought the fight against HARP and stuff like that, and they're looked at as like crackpots, and, you know, we presented all that stuff in our episode, and the whole conspiracy theory with missing Alaska was after that episode, things went downhill.
That's interesting.
Those, you know, you can insert whatever you want. I don't know necessarily that was true. You have to remember that we had, you know, when things aired, we'd already filmed almost three quarters of it. So, you know, when things were getting on air, we were just finishing up filming. So, you know, it easily could have been the case. You know, because there was a lot of turmoil with what happened with the show being on History Channel, and, you know, got blamed on a lot with History Channel changing hands with the president, and CEO of the company changing, and A&E changing out their president, which is the mother company, and just things like that. But, you know, you can get into that kind of stuff and go down those rabbit holes forever, that's for sure.
Well, you know, Jax, we've got a listener that's been on hold, I think, wants to perhaps ask you a question. Are you up for taking a call?
Absolutely.
Okay, hang on one sec. Hi, Unlocking the Unknown. Who's this? Okay, that might have been the Illuminati calling in. We'll see if they can reconnect.
I think I heard some fancies in there.
That could have been George Soros. I'm not sure, but we'll go ahead and press anyway. We're very popular with the Illuminati set, from what our figures tell us. So,
but this Journey with Jax, when exactly is that? Are you looking to premiere that? I know I was reading, and it was saying that you were going to be filming the first episode in summer of 2018. Is that correct?
Well, we've already filmed our teaser episode, and the first episode we were supposed to film at the end of last month. Things got shaken up, as they always do, with us having to go to New York City and do some presentation on it, so we backed that up. Right now we're just looking at all our different directions. Like I said before, it's very important for me to, you know, maintain executive control over the content. And every which way we seem to go, the networks or whatever want to take over, or it's too small with just going digital for the cost. You know what I mean? Because nothing I ever do seems to ever be cheap, right? So, that's the big hang up. We're just trying to figure out the direction. We've added in a new manager and a publicist and trying to figure out our options, because this kind of thing is going to take a team more than just myself and the production company. So we will see. But like I said, we'll be filming regardless. I said we just got done. Actually, editing just got done on our teaser episode right before we left for New York City. We had to do some quick changes and things like that. So, you know, you just got to go with the flow, and, you know, when focuses change, you can't jump off the bridge. But it's all going to happen one way or another.
Good.
Well, if Jackson, you know, if you need a resident Tide Pod eater, I humbly nominate Ed from the show for you.
It might be Leaf. The government might be listening.
Yeah. Is there a chance that in a future episode of Journey with Jax, we might be seeing somebody like Tommy or Ken Gerhardt make a guest appearance?
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, I mean, so, you know, one of the things that has been, always been thrown out at me with for doing a new show is that, you know, are you going to have a sidekick or a partner? You know, I've always been open to that idea, but what I would rather do, because I'm a really big believer in boots on the ground, there's just no way to get up to speed on new areas quick enough and immerse yourself fast enough for production value. You know, a lot of times when I'm an investigator, like right now, I'm headed to Utah for a case. I'm going there for, you know, a set of time, and I'm able to, you know, immerse myself in what I'm doing. You don't really have that with production value. You know, when you're doing a production, you unfortunately, the way productions are done and the way investigations are done don't really coincide. They're kind of like oil and water. And so some things you have to speed up. So, and the best way to handle that is to have a boots on the ground person join the investigation. So that's more of the direction I'd probably be going. It may not be every episode, but a lot of episodes, you know, will have somebody, and there'll be people probably that you even know within our community. You know, Ken's definitely one of them. We've talked for years about revisiting the area up in Alaska, a couple of different episodes that, you know, maybe got taken down different directions, or there are pieces of parts of episodes that we learned about that we didn't really get to explore, so we might go back. You know, I don't want to get pigeonholed into one area of the country either, so it'll be all over the place. I already have a couple of people for a New York case and a Pennsylvania case that you guys would know by name, but I won't name them now, you know, that would be on the show as a boots on the ground investigator assisting me. So it'll be a little more like that, which will make the show a little more interesting. You know, every episode I have a little different take on them with the person that's involved, you know.
I like that angle. I really do.
Do you ever use background extras in your shows, you know, the common thug or tattooed bald ugly guy, anything like that?
Well, you know, it's funny, sometimes there is that. You run into issues sometimes with witnesses. Witnesses will give you, you know, their statement might not want to be on television, or, you know, have their face used. So then you have to reenact it. You know, you have to reenact their interview. So we'll get actors, and we'll get lay people who want to do it. You know what I mean? They'll take the person's place. Again, those are production things versus investigative things that I can't really control. You know, or maybe sometimes stories have copyrights and stuff on them, so some things have to be changed in the presentation of them, you know, in order to not get sued, let's be frank. So those things do happen, and sometimes those things do require, you know, having people who aren't necessarily involved, you know, get to be in it. You know, there's a couple of people I still keep in contact that were in our shows and Missing Alaska for different little things that, you know, might have represented a witness, or you know something we had to recreate, and they became friends over the years.
Cool. Well, if you ever got the need for something like that in Midwest, I have a close friend of mine that I could put you in contact with.
Sounds good.
Strictly asking for a friend. Strictly asking for a friend. Ain't that what they say?
Yeah, exactly.
I think we have Tampa, Florida covered for you, too, if you need boots on the ground. So, or middle-aged, ugly white guys in the background, whatever you need.
Have you ever got to flip the script in regards to being a basically a guest on another investigation where you're not leading the investigation? Or, you know, take paranormal, for instance. Have you ever gone with another paranormal group or individual where it was their case and they had you along and you were more looking at it from that point of view?
Oh, yeah. That happens a lot because especially when you've been doing an investigation for a while or continually, you know, especially with something that, you know, it's maybe, say, a cold case that, you know, you're constantly reviewing maybe even for years, you've got to bring in fresh eyes as you start missing some things that might be right in front of your face. So, yeah, don't get brought in, you know, paranormal things, mostly in Arizona with that stuff. You know, I'll get asked, hey, you know, I've been working this case for a while. You come out and tell me what you think, you know, that type of stuff. You know, if I've got time, I'll go out on that kind of stuff.
That's really cool. I mean, you're familiar with Steve DeShavi, I'll assume?
Does not sound familiar.
Okay. Steve also is in the entertainment industry, and he has a show. He's an ex-New York Police Department detective, and he works with the psychic. And he does the investigative side. He keeps it – he's pretty much the skeptic, and it has the same type of flavor, not the explorer type of flavor to it, but the same type of flavor. I love that because being in law enforcement, you have a certain trained way of thinking – and viewing a situation, and it's great to have that type of input when it comes to any of these type of cases. And speaking from a paranormal perspective, I love that when we had people who have been involved in law enforcement and have been on cases, they're able to think of things that we aren't able to think of. That's why I like when you said about a fresh new set of eyes. It definitely rang a bell.
Oh, yeah. It's very important, you know, even sometimes bringing a child along, you know, obviously if it's a safe situation. But, you know, sometimes those fresh, innocent eyes can really show you different things. I took a 15-year-old out with me on a case last month and just had them look at what I was looking at. And it was interesting the things they pointed out. Nothing really became of it, but it was interesting to hear their point of view and what they saw. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes the unobstructed mind, meaning they're not cluttered full of conspiracy theories like all of us sitting here talking. sometimes those innocent eyes and innocent mind can really you can glean a lot off of.
Well, Jack's brother, I know you got to step here in a couple minutes. So first off, I want to say thank you very, very much for being a repeat offender or guest on the show and helping us launch season 3. Out of our hiatus. We really, really appreciate it. If anybody wanted to follow your exploits, whether it be your acting career or your television stuff or Journeys with Jax, how do they follow you on social media and things like that?
Well, there's a lot of them, but the easiest thing to ever look me up is just my name, Jax Menez Otwell. It's the same on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and any other social media. Same thing with for acting for IMDb. If you follow, any of you guys follow that stuff for actors, you just put my name in there and it'll pop me right up. So as long as you have those three little names, it'll pop up no matter what you search me on. Obviously, my company website's atwellinvestigations.com, and that's kind of been my central powerhouse. Now you can even learn about the show and stuff on there. It's got its own tab on there. So, and you can get to my blog site from there too. So, easy way to do that, but use this just my name, Jack Menez Otwell, depending on what social media you're using.
Well, brother, we really, really appreciate you coming on. Safe travels on the road tonight, and I hopefully will get to hook up with you next month and when I get out there to Phoenix, and maybe we can start working on that investigation of the domes down there in Casa Grande.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to do that soon because I think they're tearing them down.
Oh, no, yeah, we'll definitely have to work on that then.
Yeah.
All right, brother, safe
travels. There's another one. I found another one, though, for you, Gary. If you come out here, I want to go look at out in, by Kingman. There's an abandoned mansion out there that needs some looking at.
All right, we'll definitely keep that in mind. We'll work on that while I'm out there.
All right. You guys have a good night.
Take it easy,
Jack. Thanks for having me on.
Jack, it's
been
a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, guys, have a good night.
Take care.
That was our guest, private investigator, star of the hit History Channel series Missing in Alaska, and the man behind Journeys with Jax, Jax Atwell. Boys, I think we survived our first show together. You guys did better than I did. The Illuminati cut my mic out, and I think George Soros called in and just left us hanging there to let us know he was listening. But I wanted to get your guys' thoughts and input on how the first show went.
It was a lot of fun, you know, and I'm looking forward to a lot more of these. It's so much better when the guest is, you know, great guest like Jax was and easy to talk to. But he made it pretty painless for me.
B-Hux, you still with us?
Yeah, man. For me, it's a great first-time experience. I think I've heard all your shows or close to all your shows. And my personal view, which is not endorsed by George Soros, is I think this might have been your best show ever.
I would have to agree with that, my friend, definitely. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for our first Season 3 show out of hiatus. Join us next week at our new time slot here on Monday nights, 7 to 9 p.m., when our guests will be the proprietors, the managers of Hales Bar, Dam, and Marina, the haunted Hales Bar, Dam, and Marina, Jeff and Vicky Holder. Until then, be good to one another, and we will see you guys next week on Unlocking the Unknown Radio with Gary, Brian, and Ed. Take care.
Take care, everyone.
You're listening to Unlocking the Unknown Radio.